All right, I believe we're ready for our fourth case for today, James Perez against Staples Contract & Commercial, LLC. Mr. Sinson.
Good morning and welcome. This case, as you know, got reversed or got summary judgment granted. And I just want to start out by talking about the obvious, which is summary judgment is only relevant if the evidence is taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. And every court that grants or denies summary judgment always says they're going to do that, but really doing it is something completely different. And it's very clear to us in this case that that did not occur. Having said that, it probably doesn't really matter on some level to this panel because, as you know, review is de novo. But I would beg this court to take a serious look at my client's affidavit in this case that was generated by him reviewing 4,000 pages of Staples documents and collating all of that important information about his performance into that document. It's so significant in this case that the Staples never went back to that affidavit and said our own underlying documents contradict anything that he said in that affidavit. And I know that the district court was a little vague about why it was that, or what it was relying on or not relying in that affidavit, but the reality of it is that affidavit is unrebutted in all respects.
Well, I'm not sure about that, and I think there were some concerns about the consistency with the deposition, but let me ask about Exhibit 31, this exhibit that purported to show his monthly sales for March, April, May, and June of 2016. And the district court said, well, you know, that's all very well and good, but where's the foundation for this? You know, where do these numbers come from? And I can't find it. And so I would like to know what your response is.
Yeah, so let me say a few things about that. One is it came from the flash reports, which are essentially the spreadsheets that were attached to his affidavit. All of them are in there. The other thing I would say that I think
it needs to be nailed down more. Staples certainly comes up with quite different numbers for these months. We can agree on that.
Let's look at, yeah, I agree with Your Honor that Staples came up with different numbers, but our numbers were based on the flash reports and in detail, client by client, what the numbers were for each client. That Exhibit 31, which is, it says, it lists each individual client and then it says what the corresponding win amount for that is. Staples just has an email from Fred Cole saying that there were lower numbers and it doesn't detail what accounts he's relying on, what he's looking at, and it doesn't even say anything about him looking at flash reports. It's just a conclusory email. And what's interesting about that is that that's an email that allegedly he generates based on some communication, well, I don't know with who, but potentially with my client. And my client's notes on that same discussion would be on his laptop, which we serve Staples with a copy of this lawsuit, not fired, serve them a copy of the lawsuit 12 days after my client was fired, and they still claim that they lost his laptop. So I would say this about Exhibit 31, though. You know, talk about the strength of the evidence in here. Fred Coe is basically an email that's unsupported by any names of any companies or any breakouts of how he got to
those numbers. I understand that, but you know, if there were a foundation for this document, but that's what bothered Judge Dow. You know, he just couldn't find it, and without a foundation, it's not good enough to controvert that June 2nd email, right? That you're talking about.
The flash reports, I would say a few things about that. One is the flash reports are attached, are referenced as exhibits to the affidavit. But I would also say this, there were missing flash reports that Staples never produced. And they were not only on the laptop, but they should have been kept in Staples' regular course of business. So it's not like we had everything. And they never turned to their own records and said, any of the specific allegations in 31 are contradicted by our records. They never did that. And my client certainly would be in a position to have personal knowledge as to when amounts and to what clients he had or what accounts he had. So he has personal knowledge about this, and we feel that that's enough to establish that he complied with this win amount. I would also add that...
A couple of quick questions, please, sure. Mr. Simpson. You've talked a lot about the laptop in your appellate briefs. Did you make any spoliation argument in the district court? We were unable to find it.
Yeah, so what happened on that was we mainly had motions to compel what they admitted they existed, but they wouldn't turn over.
Let me ask my question.
Yeah, so the answer to the question is no, we did not make spoliation arguments down below. Okay. That didn't mean that we're not going to make them for a jury instruction. And there's not, and it didn't mean that we weren't going to, argue okay, that later you. In the case. We certainly did when we responded to the motion for summary judgment.
Thank you.
But you are correct. Counsel, we did not make that argument.
Counsel, excuse me. On Exhibit 31, Mr. Perez claims a $50,000 win for USPS Elk Grove Village.
Yes.
I thought the evidence indicated that Elk Grove Village, the post office, was buying a few hundred dollars of product at a time. Did I misunderstand that?
Wasn't this the one with the $289 and the district court says, how did that balloon up?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that question because I think it's important to clarify it. So the way this works is my client went in and met with Elk Grove. And Elk Grove says to them, listen, this is our expectations about what we're going to buy in the course of the next year. Their first purchase was only $289. This was a brand new account. But based on his conversations with them about what they expected to purchase in the next year, he was in a position to calculate this win as $50,000. And what's interesting about it is that's how
one post office was going to spend $50,000 on cleaning fluids in a year?
Yeah, it wasn't just cleaning fluids. It was a lot of different other materials.
Okay.
But yes, the answer to that is yes. So,
Mr. Simpson, sure, could I ask you, it seems to me that the biggest problem you're facing here is causation with your two state law claims. With respect to the question of jury duty and the debate between deposition and affidavit about whether the defendant did or did not accommodate the 4 days of jury duty, is there any evidence indicating that another 4 days would have, in essence, moved plaintiff from the red to the green in complying with the ASP standards?
I don't know that answer, but I would say this. I mean, it's,
that sounds like the answer is no, there is no such evidence.
Well, he got fired. So, you're asking me, would he have been able to close some more business?
But would the 4 days have made the difference between yes and no, I think, is Judge Hamilton's
precisely
question.
Mm-hmm.
4 days is pretty short for that much change.
Right. Right. But I mean, for instance, in December, he closed a $900,000 account with Export Fitness.
Can I just throw in before you run out of time, one other concern I have with causation on the jury duty in particular. They put him on this ASP plan no later than the 11th of March. Maybe it's the 7th, maybe it's the 11th, I don't care. He doesn't even hear about jury duty until after that. So how can the ASP be retaliation for the jury duty? And I would say much the same thing about this Klaxmild Fort detergent, which is happening long after the company has decided to put him on an ASP. So how can causation work?
We're not saying he got the ASP because of him opposing jury duty or because opposed the sale of illegal detergent. I mean, the timeline for that's wrong, as Your Honor just pointed out. Right. But what we are saying is that the way they enforced the ASP was retaliatory, and that their decision to fire him based on the ASP was retaliatory. In other words, at some point they have to make this decision about, did he comply with the ASP? And if the motive, or one of the motives for him, for their conclusion that they're going to fire him because he didn't comply with the ASP, was because they're mad at him for going to jury duty, or they are okay. mad at him for opposing the sale of illegal detergent in New York State, which the evidence indicates today.
All right,
today
we know this point. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. We will move to Ms. Jones.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. Jennifer Jones on behalf of Defendant Appellee Staples Contract and Commercial LLC. It's our position today that the district court's decision should be affirmed in its entirety because appellant has failed to establish any genuine issue of material fact that there is any basis for employer liability on his claims of retaliatory discharge. From our perspective, this case represents an effort by the appellant to sort of throw everything but the kitchen sink at his claims in a concerted effort to obfuscate the record so as to survive summary judgment. And despite these extensive efforts that appellant went to in order to obfuscate the record, the district court actually did carefully consider and correctly rejected each of appellant's arguments during not only the MSJ proceedings, but also through its consideration of appellant's Rule 59E motion to alter and amend the judgment. Appellant has raised numerous evidentiary issues in this case. For instance, he argued that the district court did not properly consider appellant's affidavit, but the district court was very clear in rendering both of its decisions that it did in fact consider Mr. Perez's affidavit, except for those portions that either directly contradicted his deposition testimony or were obviously inadmissible because they were conclusory and not based on personal knowledge. Appellant has also attempted to rely on all sorts of extraneous homemade spreadsheets for which no evidentiary foundation was laid to support his opposition to Staples' motion for summary judgment.
He says that your evidence, excuse me, but I understand Mr. Simpson to be arguing that this June 2nd email from Mr. Koha coming up with the numbers 48,000 for March, 75,000 for April, and 25,000 for May basically has no foundation either. So there's no evidence that he wasn't performing up to the standards of the ASP.
Well, in response to that, so the district court actually did, I believe, and I don't want to misunderstand Mr. Simpson's argument, but I believe he's arguing that for that reason, the court should defer to Exhibit 31. But in fact, in Rule 59E motion and order, the judge did consider Exhibit 31 and carefully, in fact, considered the charts that were created by Perez during the course of the litigation, which showed his monthly sales for the months of March through June of 2016. And notwithstanding that the district court actually viewed the contents of that exhibit in a favorable light to Mr. Perez, the district court still found that Mr. Perez failed to satisfy the AFP, not only because the numbers still did not add up to the minimum baseline requirements of the AFP, but also because he failed to do simple things like attend 5 required meetings per week, client contacts per week.
On that point, however, Ms. Jones, wasn't it pretty clear that Mr. Koha was using an average of meetings per week?
I believe Mr. Simpson was referring to an email in which he referred to an average. However, what the district court properly found was that the ASP did not refer to averages. The ASP referred to 5 meetings per week.
Well, if Mr. Koha, who put it in place, and he was using an average to calculate compliance, that would seem to be more relevant to me than the district judge's interpretation of it. And is it also correct that Mr. Koha miscalculated the average using a denominator of 16 weeks rather than 13 weeks?
In response to your first question, so because Mr. Koha is using an exemplary figure does not mean that that's not what the AST required. The AST requirements were very clear. They stated that they required 5 meetings per week, and Mr. Perez never objected to.
So did that? Would that have applied? Would that have applied during the week that he was on vacation?
Yes, Your Honor, because Mr.
So that means that any. So excuse me. Then so that taking vacation meant a violation of the ASP because he would have 1 week where he would not have had. Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. What I'm saying is it doesn't matter whether or not we consider his vacation, because if you look at the weeks that he was not on vacation, he did not meet those requirements of 5 meetings per week. So even if we don't discount the vacation week, he's still not meeting the requirements. So it's not an issue that the court even needs to reach in this case.
So you think the document is clear that the meetings per week was each and every week.
Correct. Yet
Koha's email on June 2nd says average per week, right?
It does, Your Honor, it does not matter, because even setting aside the issue of 5 meetings per week, if we're looking at just the numbers on the other components, so there were 3 components to the ASP. And any way you cut it, Mr. Perez is not meeting one of the 3 requirements any way you cut it. He's even viewing exhibit, and I believe going back to your second point, so even viewing exhibit 31 in the light most favorable to Mr. Perez, those figures still, and setting aside whether or not Mr. Koha miscalculated those figures, it doesn't matter, because the district court ultimately in its Rule 59e motion gave plaintiff the numbers that he calculated. And based on those numbers calculated by plaintiff, appellant, he still could not establish that he met the figures required for either the pipeline or his sales growth number. So
can I say, I think maybe what you're getting at here, though, is his argument that he has this, or he formerly had this facility solutions account executive position where the required numbers were much higher, $1 million and so on. But in fact, as this change is being implemented, he has this Darwin account manager position, which with a much lower expectation. And he's in a position where he's told he's got to develop all this business, even though it's impossible for him to do it.
Your Honor, in response to that question, so Mr. Perez was aware of his ASP requirements and the Darwin program, and the district court correctly found that despite having all the knowledge available to him, he could have raised those issues at that time, and he did not. He agreed to the ASP as it was.
He didn't have much bargaining power at that point, did he? I mean, it seems to me a little unrealistic.
Well, actually, I mean, with respect to that issue, there's ultimately, regardless of whether or not he agreed to the ASP, I think the court even addresses this point. Even assuming that he didn't agree to the ASP, it is what the ASP required. It was the requirement of his employer. And even if the employer was treating him unfairly, that unfair treatment began well before and well in advance of his jury duty service and the detergent issues arose. So there's still no causal connection to establish appellant's claim. I wanted to address another issue that appellant raised in his leading argument regarding the laptop. The exfoliation claims, as he admitted, were not raised at the district court level. And even if they had been, the district court properly found that appellant still has not stated to date what exactly he expects he will find on that laptop to change the outcome of this case. So for that reason, the district court properly disregarded that argument.
So was he entirely removed from the export account after he said it's illegal in New York, or after he received the word and then tried to have the conference call to sell this Clacks Mild Fort detergent? I guess it's got an ingredient in it that New York doesn't permit. Did they just take him off altogether, or was he just nominally on it but out of the loop?
I am not sure that that's in the record, Your Honor. However, I do know that Mr. Koa told appellant not to worry about the detergent issue because that would be addressed by Mr. Koa and the supplier. So I'm not sure as to whether or not he was taken off of that account or not. I know that the accounts that he contends are at issue were actually removed well before his AFP and well before any of these issues arose. So again, with respect to his arguments that he was removed from particular accounts, there's just no evidence in the record that there was any causal connection between that and his employment termination. I realize I'm running up out of time, so with that being said, we would ask the court to affirm the district court's ruling in the entirety.
All right, thank you. Anything further, Mr. Simpson?
Your Honor, I could speak for an hour, but I
want to speak for an hour.
Yeah, I want to be respectful of your time. If you want to grant me some time, I will.
I'll give
use
you a
it,
minute to wrap to... up. I'll give you
okay.
a minute to wrap up.
Just a few random sentences here then. I think it's important that the ASP says that his title is account executive, and every single person says that he was an account manager under Darwin with completely different set of rules. I think it's important that Julie Claver, year over year growth in the last month before Jim Perez was fired was -1.6, and Jim Perez's year over year growth was +66. And I think that that the affidavit that was submitted by Staples from Christina Gonzalez regarding jurisdiction that claims that Jim Perez is being sued by Staples does nothing to establish the opposite, which is how these companies would be treated if Jim Perez was suing Staples. And as such, we don't think there's jurisdiction, and there should have been a motion brought under Rule 26C, which talks about a transfer of interest, and it wasn't done, and there has to be a reason
this
for that.
This is this Inc. LLC business. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.